Peter B. Collins News and Comment. Here it is Thursday, June 27, 2013, and the summer of leaks continues. Over at Langley at the CIA, I'll bet they play this song frequently on the speakers. Big eyes are always watching. The spooks at the CIA and John Brennan, who transferred over from the White House where he was Obama's drone meister. Before that, he spent 25 years at the CIA. He's issued a new memo called the Honor the Oath Campaign, intending to remind members of the spook community that they're supposed to keep secrets. The Honor the Oath campaign is supposed to reinforce, quote, our corporate culture of secrecy. This document has now been leaked. Mr. Brennan wrote that the campaign is a result of a CIA security review started last summer by David Petraeus before his personal behavior was exposed, by some carefully calculated leaks. And after several high-profile anonymous leaks and publications by former senior officers. And this new effort outlines the necessity, it says, to take a harsher stance on former employees intending to publish materials about their time in the organization. So, they can't even keep a memo about leaks from leaking. And this underscores that calculated leaks from Washington insiders are okay. Maybe they embarrass the top dogs in the intelligence community. But these people aren't prosecuted under the Espionage Act like Ed Snowden, Tom Drake, Bradley Manning. Nope. And it's interesting because this was leaked to the Associated Press, the news organ that was the subject of a rather broad demand for telephone records from the Justice Department that was exposed about a month or 6 weeks ago. And that, of course, related to the AP's coverage of the double agent in Yemen, the guy who was always under American control, according to John Brennan. And they say that the leak of the information, the publication of the news by the AP, which occurred just a day before the administration unmasked this secret operation, caused severe damage. That's what we are told. Well, that's bogus. And over at the Associated Press, the CEO, Gary Pruitt, says that sources have stopped speaking to the Associated Press. Longtime trusted sources are becoming anxious about conversing with AP, even on issues unrelated to national security. So there is a chilling effect. But this is also unconstitutional. It violates, clearly, the First Amendment. And we need to see efforts on the part of AP to litigate these issues, and we need to see reform in the Congress. Meanwhile, Glenn Greenwald's latest articles, based on information provided by Ed Snowden, unmasks the history of the collection of our telephone records and emails. Back in 2001, the so-called warrantless surveillance program, and when you hear warrantless, substitute the word illegal. Well, it started in late 2001, and they would use the FISA court and get a federal judge to approve a bulk collection order of the metadata, and this would be renewed every 90 days. Now, the news here is that the Obama administration reports it ended the program called Stellar Wind in 2011. They won't tell us exactly why. They said it was for operational and resource reasons, and that the program has not been restarted. Now, Greenwald doesn't explain the contradiction between this report that the program ended and the first release from Ed Snowden's treasure trove, which was the FISA court order dated April 2013, with the continuing demand for Verizon to turn over all phone records of its customers. And so we'll have to explore this a little more deeply. But one of the issues that really occurs to me is they claim that when it comes to intercepted emails, they only look at the sender, the recipient, and the subject line. Now, this is flatly bullshit. Anyone who has sent an email that bounced, you get a response from Mailer Daemon. You've seen that, right? Daemon, D-E-D-A-E-M-O-N. It means something, but I can't tell you what it is. And when your email bounces, you get all this gibberish code, and when you scroll down, you see the email that you sent first, the to, then the from, then the subject line, and then the entire contents of the email are trailed out right below there. There is no distinction. It's not like a snail mail letter where the outside of the envelope is, you know, something that is available for anyone to scrutinize, including your postal carrier. But the inside is intended to be private. There is no such distinction with email. And so when they say they're collecting metadata on phone calls but not listening to the calls, well, they listen to them later. And when they say they're collecting metadata on emails but not reading the contents, I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I call that a lie. So Stellar Wind initially did not rely on the authority of any court. Then they got court orders. Then James Comey had the showdown at John Ashcroft's hospital bed in 2004. But Greenwald reports Comey's act of defiance when he wouldn't sign that document, foisted on the Attorney General by Andrew Card, the White House Chief of Staff, and Gonzalez, later became the Attorney General, says Comey's act of defiance did not end the IP metadata collection, the documents reveal. It simply brought it under a newly created legal framework. And this all goes back to John Poindexter's rogue operation at the Pentagon called TIA, Total Information Awareness. When that was exposed, they claimed they rolled it up and shut it down. No, they continued the effort in a different department under a different name. And so we're learning more about the history, and it's a tortured history. One of the other things that surfaces is this this claim that they're very careful, and that if there's a so-called U.S. person, which is an American citizen or a legal resident in the United States, on one end of the call, that the NSA discontinues the collection of that call and the listening to it immediately. So, at one point, this is about 2007, Michael Mukasey was the third Attorney General under George W. Bush. And here's a quote from a document. It says, NSA believes it is over-identifying numbers and addresses that belong to United States persons. And so what they decided to do in order to avoid that was to collect records on all U.S. persons. Now, to be generous, it's counterintuitive. And to be more critical, this just doesn't hold up to close scrutiny. And it mirrors what Russell Tice told us in our first interview with him a few years ago, Tice being the NSA whistleblower, that they set up this special program that they said was to super guard the telephone numbers of journalists. The idea was they wanted to make sure that they never, ever, ever wiretapped a journalist. But Russ Tice revealed that that was a ruse, and that they were super-targeting journalists so that they could super-target journalists. So when these lying sacks of shit try to tell us new lies, that we shouldn't be worried because, oh, we're only collecting metadata, we only look at the subject line, never the contents of an email. It's unbelievable. And you should treat it that way. Meanwhile, the spooks are feeding the corporate news machinery with dirt on Ed Snowden and on Glenn Greenwald. First up, Snowden gets the treatment from the Washington Post. They found that he used the email or chat handle The True Hoo-Ha. And they find some things that conflict with Ed Snowden's current position of exposing America's secrets. They say in January 2009, when the New York Times exposed the covert program where we inserted the Stuxnet and Flame viruses into Iran's nuclear computer industry, that Ed Snowden wrote online, "They're reporting classified shit. You don't put that shit in the newspaper." Newspaper in all caps. This occurs while Snowden, age 25, is stationed in Geneva and working for the CIA. Regarding the New York Times, "Are they trying to start a war? Jesus Christ, they're like WikiLeaks," he said. So, the Washington Post takes these cherry-picked quotes from what we're told or emails or postings by Ed Snowden, and then they spin it up this way. "Snowden's libertarian and dogmatic online persona adds to the emerging portrait of a shape-shifting young man whose motivations and decision-making remain in flux." Now, this is such crapola, because they are analyzing Ed Snowden and presenting some conclusions here, at least theories, about his shape-shifting persona. They've never met the guy. They haven't talked to him. Barton Gellman has, but he didn't participate in the writing of this article. And so this is pure and simple character assassination of a guy who, from what we know, is still holed up in a mini hotel at the Moscow airport and unavailable for comment on these vicious attacks. Another little slime ball maneuver here. They say the actions of Ed Snowden have left the 30-year-old open to charges that the idealism he first professed has given way to self-preservation. That's because he left Hong Kong instead of sitting there waiting to be arrested and extradited to the United States. And then, of course, they recycled the fact that he didn't have a high school diploma, but then he got hired by the CIA without a high school diploma. So I would say that's a plus for Ed Snowden and a minus for the CIA. But the Washington Post, the official mouthpiece for the Central Intelligence Agency, spins it up the other way. That something is wrong with Ed Snowden because he was able to persuade the CIA to hire him without a high school diploma. And one other quote related to the New York Times disclosure of the Iranian Stuxnet virus. Snowden says that the people who exposed the classified information, quote, "those people should be shot in the balls." Well, I have no idea when Ed Snowden had a change of heart, when he reached a tipping point and said, "I can't take this anymore." But this cherry-picked information that we're told he wrote may have just been stuff that he wrote posturing to cover his own inner feelings as he tried to move from the CIA to the NSA. We're told that he did consciously decide to go to the NSA so he could get access to the information that he is now sharing with the public. Now, the other sliming maneuver came out of the New York Post yesterday. They've dug up some dirt on Glenn Greenwald. And I'll tell you a little bit about it because it'll inoculate you from any real attempt to slander him that is likely to come in the near future. It exposed that Glenn Greenwald is a young attorney worked for a client who produced adult videos. Glenn Greenwald is an out gay man. And he explained, when confronted about these issues, that, he has had some experiences in life that he's not especially proud of, and that he knew that when he became the front man for Ed Snowden's leaks, that he would be personally attacked, and they'd go through his dumpster, the virtual dumpster, and that's what they've done. And so, related to the porn videos, there was a lawsuit that followed, claims and counterclaims, and frankly, I don't care. The clear motivation here is that this negative information on Snowden and Greenwald is being leaked in order to undermine the messengers and to distract us from the message. Well, I, for one, won't fall into that trap. Here in San Francisco, it was a festive day yesterday, particularly at City Hall and in the Castro District. And I am just delighted that while the Supreme Court decisions on Prop 8 and the Defense of Marriage Act were not sweeping, were not complete, that this is a train that cannot be stopped. And even in his angry dissent, Justice Scalia predicted, as he accurately predicted these events in an angry dissent, I think about 10, 12 years ago, he says that the majority in overturning Prop 8 is setting the stage for marriage equality in every state. I don't know how long that's going to take, but in this case, I'll be happy to defer to Antonin Scalia. Also, Rachel Maddow had a very touching story in her coverage of these decisions on Wednesday night. And she focused on how at the Supreme Court, when these decisions are published, they have interns or other young, healthy people who put on track shoes and sneakers, and they grab the documents as soon as the court releases them and run them out to reporters and producers who are waiting outside the Supreme Court building. She said, likewise, in New York, there was a pro-gay rights agency. As soon as they were able to print out a copy of the Supreme Court decision, they handed it off to a young man in sneakers who ran five or six blocks to a federal courthouse where a hearing was underway, and a married male gay couple was facing the deportation of one of the husbands because he is not a citizen. And when they were able to deliver the Supreme Court decision on the Defense of Marriage Act to the court, well, they put a stay on the proceedings to deport that man. And Gavin Newsom, former mayor of San Francisco, now California's lieutenant governor, the man who unilaterally just said, we're going to allow gays to marry back in 2004, he took a victory lap at City Hall. One of the comments that he made after the California Supreme Court ruled that same-sex marriage was constitutional, Newsom gave a powerful speech, and he said, this door's wide open now. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. And it was delivered not quite in the Howard Dean scream mode, but sufficiently passionate that soundbite was lifted and used by the supporters of Prop 8 in the television commercials that they ran in order to pass that regressive ballot measure. Well, all that is history now. There's a lot of cleanup work to be done. There are some 38 or 39 states that still don't permit marriage equality. But this is an important landmark, and I am pleased to have seen it. United States Senate today, by a vote of 68 to 32, passed their immigration reform package, including the $39 billion to attempt to seal the southern border, as if it's the only border we have. And that racist element was enough to bring over many Republicans and get close to the 70-vote target that the White House had articulated as a way of putting pressure on the House of Representatives to pass similar legislation. And John Boehner, who clearly is not in control of his caucus, we saw that starkly evidenced by the failure of his farm bill last week, he's going to attempt to cobble together some sort of an immigration bill and see if he can pass it through the Tea Party monsters that he presides over. But it's going to be a long haul, and we may end up with no bill whatsoever. I still don't really approve of this package. I mean, it's better than nothing. But the 13-year slow walk for those who are currently here without documents to even apply for citizenship, it's unnecessary, it's draconian, and it is punitive. And the idea that we're going to spend $39 billion that we claim we don't have, double the number of Border Patrol agents along the southern border, build fences and deploy drones, and it's just a total waste. Of course, Democrats are eager to get anything, something out of this, and they'll hold their noses and take whatever they can get. Some promising activity in the Armed Services Committee of the United States Senate that I just learned about late last week in the markup of the 2014 NDAA, that's the Pentagon's budget bill. Carl Levin, the senator from Michigan who has said that he will not seek another term, has inserted language that will allow the transfer of prisoners out of Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, even into the United States for medical care, for trial, or for incarceration. This is real progress. Now, it's got a long way to go, and the House, barely controlled by John Boehner, has passed their version of the bill that keeps all of the existing transfer restrictions intact and adds one saying that the president is not allowed to send anybody back to Yemen. 56 of the 166 prisoners still there are Yemeni. That's 56 who have been cleared for release by both Obama and, in many cases, Bush representatives. So Levin is streamlining the process by which a defense secretary would certify that someone who's about to be released is not a risk of reoffending. And I just need to underscore that it's been over a month since the president gave his heartfelt, tortured speech. He could have used the waiver process to release tens or dozens of men from Guantanamo. Not a single individual has left. And I don't understand it, because the president does have that authority, and he's not willing to use it. And the other blight on America's incarceration history in the recent years was Abu Ghraib. And a federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit accusing the mercenary contractor CACI, C-A-C-I, CACI International, of responsibility for the torture of individuals at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. U.S. District Judge Gerald Bruce Lee in Alexandria, Virginia, said that he lacks jurisdiction to hear the claims because of a recent Supreme Court decision under the Alien Tort Statute. This is just 8 months after the company that has inherited the liability of another contractor called L3 Communications paid over $5 million to settle claims against a unit of L3 brought by about six dozen people who were tortured at Abu Ghraib. So this is not sensible. We have one of the responsible parties making a settlement to avoid trial, and the one that held out didn't make a settlement gets off scot-free. And Baher Azmi, legal director at the Center for Constitutional Rights, who represents the victims, plans to appeal. He said, "We argue that there were no post-Kyobel decisions that relates to the recent Supreme Court decision, and that decision said that violations outside the United States must touch and concern U.S. territory with, this is nebulous, quote, sufficient force before individuals could sue." And so Azmi answers, you had a U.S.-based company that contracted with the U.S. government to provide interrogation services to U.S.-occupied Iraq and conspired with U.S. soldiers to torture and abuse detainees. Does that not have, in the language of Justice Roberts, sufficient force in its connection to the United States? We shall see. A couple of items from Boston, where the Cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church, Sean O'Malley, has issued a gag order on an Austrian priest who is due to speak in Boston in mid-July. That priest, the Reverend Helmut Schuller, is being silenced because he advocates the ordination of women as priests as well as married men. And this is verboten in the Catholic Church. Rather than permit any kind of discussion or dissent or opposing views, they are banning him from speaking at any Catholic parish or at church events. What would Jesus do? Somebody asked Cardinal O'Malley. Also in Boston, a federal grand jury has issued a 30-count indictment against Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, the surviving Boston Marathon bombing suspect, charging him with using a weapon of mass destruction to kill three people and injure more than 200 others on April 15th. Of course, in the official news accounts, they don't raise any questions about Tsarnaev's older brother, his longtime connection to the FBI, and many other very fishy elements of the investigation and the events that occurred following the Boston Marathon on April 15th. In Texas, Wendy Davis is quite a hero for her filibuster, but that makes her a target, too. So she was on her feet for hours on Tuesday night, and the Democrats, including a crowd of activists who massed in the chamber of the Senate in Texas, were able to delay and block the passage of a really ugly anti-abortion bill that will sharply reduce access to abortion services in the state of Texas. I mean by a huge margin. Maybe 10% of the clinics will stay open. But Rick Perry is undaunted. He's called for another special session starting next week. And he is out pandering at the National Right to Life Convention, where he took the opportunity to take a swipe, a really below-the-belt swipe, at Wendy Davis. He said she was a teenage mother herself, and it's unfortunate that she hasn't learned from her own example. Now, I do know that Wendy Davis was a teenage mom. But how on earth does Rick Perry think that banning abortion, or essentially restricting it and making a practical ban on access to it in Texas, is going to help similarly situated teenage mothers today? Because Rick Perry is determining for them that they must carry a child to term, whether they are equipped to do so emotionally, financially. So he's making that judgment because, of course, God speaks to Rick Perry, but not to teenage moms. And here's one that I want to put out to our listeners in Australia, Hamish and Mark the Boat Builder. I wonder if you'd do me a favor and each send me an email and explain the change of the guard there. Because following a parliamentary vote, Julia Gillard is out as prime minister. She tendered her resignation after losing a ballot of ruling lawmakers by a vote of 57 to 45. And Kevin Rudd, the conservative who preceded her, is back in office. And I'd like to hear your thoughts, gentlemen, as to whether Gillard was a decent prime minister. In general, I had a favorable impression of her service. But I'd like to get the lowdown from our Aussie buddies. So drop me a note. You know how to do it. Peter at peterbcollins.com. As always, whether you're in Australia or anywhere else within the sound of my voice, you are authorized to share this podcast with absolutely anyone, including our friends at the NSA. Ah, but don't bother. They've already got it.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.